May it please the Court, for Bandek to prevail in this case, he has to convince this Court that the word qualified in paragraph 12.05 of the Lilly Plan means only one thing, and that is qualified under the Internal Revenue Code, and that it would be downright unreasonable under this Court's standard for the Employee Benefit Committee to give it any other meaning.
Can I real quickly, and forgive me, please, Mr. Larimore, ask you something?
Surely.
Basically, you've acknowledged, I guess, that the term qualified defined benefit plans in this document, as applied to U.S.-based plans, refers to plans that qualify for favorable U.S. tax treatment.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Now, you're arguing, or are you arguing that it means something different as applied to foreign plans? Because it seems to me that under your interpretation of the term qualified defined benefit plan, the term qualified essentially would have no set meaning and would change from plan to plan depending on where that plan originated. Is that the gist of your whole argument?
If I may put it in just slightly different terms, the committee's position and its decision reflects that qualified means qualified under the U.S. tax law or qualified under the tax law of the foreign jurisdiction where the plan is housed or where the plan is in residence. So, yes, it does mean qualified under American tax law or qualified under the cognate tax law of other countries. We have showed a number of...
If his UK retirement plan hadn't involved any tax preference, then he'd get that with no... Then there'd be no deduction. Is that right? No reduction?
That is probably correct. Yes, that's correct. It would only be under that post-1997 language that it would be applied more broadly to other foreign plans, and that doesn't come into play here.
Did the committee ever apply Section 1205 to a foreign plan before this case?
There is nothing in the record to show that. There's nothing in the record to show what number of other individuals are in Dr. Bandek's position.
It's pretty damaging to your position, because if it's zero, I mean, you have this notion that this 1997 amendment just closed some little... It closed a loophole, but apparently before that, nobody ever lost his foreign benefits. Isn't that correct?
Well, with respect, it's not exactly a loophole closing in 1997. It is really a broadening well beyond qualified defined benefits plans that would be subject to the offset or that are subject to the offset.
Before that, was anybody denied the full credit for these foreign retirement plans?
There is nothing in the record about that. And
your side has all the information about that. If you didn't put it in, I think the inference is there's nobody.
Well, and really, there's only one reference in the record that deals with that, which is in that very ambiguous document of sort of unknown providence that
you must have records in your company, don't you?
We do. We do. It was just not subject of that. Those that sort
words,
of search was not the
yeah,
subject of this.
If there had been anyone who'd lost his benefits before that, you would have trotted that out as evidence in support of your position.
The committee there's not any evidence of any individual case that was treated in the way that Dr. Bandek has been treated prior to his coming forward. That could be, I would be speculating about why that might be the case in terms of foreign transfers and how frequent they are, foreign pensions and how frequent they are, and that sort of thing.
Well, except that, you know, you certainly are. If ever there was a worldwide company, it's you.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
If subsection B was truly intended to expand the offset for foreign plans that are included beyond those already included in Section A, why wouldn't it include language to that effect?
I can't speak to exactly why it was drafted the way it was, but there is this notion that because benefits cannot be retroactively modified, it's probably better to leave the language exactly the way it is so that there can't be any argument that there's any attempt to retroactively modify vested rights. Vested is probably not the right word.
How much money is involved in this case?
The difference here for Dr. Bandak is about $4,000 per month.
For how long?
For his lifetime.
How old is he? Or was he as of the date when the $4,000 began getting paid to him?
I don't remember exactly, but I believe he was between 50 and 55 at that time.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you, from time to time, was he provided with estimates of his retirement benefits from...
Yes, he was.
And did the committee offset the amount he was due under the UK plan when he got those estimates?
There was no reference to the offset in those estimates. But the amount that he's receiving now is exactly what he was promised in those estimates. He's getting it, in fact, in two checks, one from the Lilly U.S. plan and one from the Lilly UK plan. But he's getting precisely what he was promised.
But it's not spelled out, is what you're saying. It's not broken down in that estimate.
In the estimate, it is not broken down. In fact, you can tell from the record here that Lilly had hoped to pay a single check to him and to actually come into possession of the assets from the Lilly UK plan that could be used to draft a single check. But the restrictions of UK law prohibited that. He had to receive the benefit directly from the UK under UK tax law.
Isn't the bottom line of all of this that although it probably is a windfall for Dr. Bandak, it's a windfall that was made possible by the sloppy contract that Lilly prepared?
Well, that's certainly what the district court found, Your Honor. But if you go back to thinking in terms of 15 years ago, 1995, which is when we're looking at this language, this kind of phrasing would have been appropriate to cover both foreign and...
Does English law use the expression qualified defined benefit plan?
Not in the same way that the United States does. We've cited...
What does it say? What's its jargon?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I don't recall. It is mentioned in our brief what the exact... UK languages, but I don't recall.
How much is the rest of his pension, the part that doesn't depend on this case?
My understanding, and I'm sure that Mr. Hall will correct me if I'm wrong, is that his pension is $18,000 a month, and it's $4,000 of that amount that's being paid from the UK plan. I may have that not quite correct, but that's the right order of magnitude. I wanted to go back.
I don't see how anyone reading qualified defined benefit plan would think it included the benefits, the plan he'd had in Albania or something like that, or Libya. I don't get that.
Well, Your Honor, we have cited
that. Why would you, looking at that, think that had any application outside the United States? It's a U.S. Legal term.
Well, I'd like to say two things about that. One is we cite secondary sources, treatise-type authority in our reply brief that does use the word qualified to refer to plans of other countries.
So what, this fellow is supposed to be reading treatises about plans in other countries?
That's the second point. It's supposed to be what an ordinary person who's not an ERISA expert, who hasn't dealt with dozens and dozens of ERISA cases, would think the term means. That's how
right.
we're supposed
and
to
if,
judge
and,
this.
And if we're interpreting these provisions in an ordinary sense, as would a person of average intelligence and experience, how can we say that A, includes an offset for foreign benefit plans, and B, expands that to include other foreign plans, when there's nothing in the language of B that would indicate that it's an extension of the foreign plans already covered, as opposed to the addition of coverage for all foreign plans? You've got to help me.
Well, the cutoff provision is really the explanation for that. The April 1st, 1997 date that is in B is what differentiates the B from the A. That provision, which is broader than we say A is, because it covers government plans, which are becoming more and more common, and it covers plans other than defined benefit plans, which are becoming more and more common, or were as of 1997, is limited to employees who are brought to the United States after that date. The language that's in A applies to people who came to the United States to work for Lilly before that date. And the question when you look at the word qualified from a ordinary everyday standpoint is, qualified for what and under what standard?
By the IRS. Approved by the IRS.
But that's the technical meaning. That's not the ordinary everyday
meaning. There is no ordinary everyday meaning.
In the context of pensions, you're saying?
Yep.
Certainly.
It's not everyday language. Qualified. Most people don't even know what defined benefit means.
Yes.
Let alone qualified.
See,
it's a technical term. You know, we have a principle that in interpreting contracts, if a technical term is used, the presumption is that it bears its technical meaning. And this has a technical meaning which has absolutely nothing to do with England. So why shouldn't that be the presumption? I mean, you guys draft this thing. Why shouldn't you be stuck with that presumption? Or stated differently, what rebuts the presumption?
Well, I would go back to one thing that Judge Rovner said, which is that Lilly has been for decades a worldwide company. And the committee, which has the knowledge of the purposes of the plan.
Why didn't you just say that? I don't understand. If you didn't want to cover their foreign, if you wanted their foreign plans to be part, you know, integrated in a sense, essentially integrated with your plan, why not just say that?
Well,
why should he be penalized because Eli Lilly can't draft a clear benefits statement?
I'm in my rebuttal time, but I would just respond to that by saying he's not being penalized. He's getting exactly down to the last
$1,000 a month, which is a lot of money.
He's getting down to the last dollar.
And for all we know, we don't know anything about Bendag. We don't know what kind of options he faced at various stages in his career. Whether you know his rights under the UK plan would have been material for this or that decision he had to make. We don't know anything of that.
Well, we do know.
All we know is that there is this presumption that technical terms used in a contract bear their technical meaning. You're the drafter of the contract, me, Eli Lilly, very sophisticated firm. Why not just say, you know, you're stuck. Use that technical term, you're stuck.
Well, and that's, of course, what the district judge said. But the point of deferring to the committee with its knowledge and experience is to allow
deferring
them.
To the committee? That's such a joke, really.
All right.
Deferring to the committee.
I'll reserve the balance of my time. Thank you.
Mr. Hull?
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. May it please the court. I am Andy Hull, counsel for Steve Bendag, the appellee in this matter. I'd like to turn to the issues that the court was just discussing, and if the court has questions regarding factual background, I'd be pleased to take them. It is true, Your Honors.
Is there any evidence about a factual background? Because I didn't even see the amount of money involved in the briefs.
I do believe that the estimates provided by counsel for Lilly were accurate in terms of the figures, both the overall plan benefit. And
so
the,
are there other interesting facts that we should be aware of?
Well, it's important to take note of the amendment of the plan, the amendment of Section 12.05.
Is there something new that you have to add?
Not anything new, Your Honor, only in context of the argument. I would point out, though, that not only is there no evidence in the record of Lilly having construed the language in 1205A as allowing for an offset for benefits from a foreign affiliate's defined benefit plan, there is no evidence in the record of the UK plan being qualified under the tax laws of the United Kingdom. That's a point that the district court correctly pointed out. There is nothing in the record establishing the fact that would allow the UK plan to somehow be subject to the construction Lilly urges for 1205A.
I'd like to go back to Judge Williams' earlier question for you. Is there any indication that other employees before Bandeck had collected both U.S. and foreign benefits for the same employment years?
There is no evidence in the record.
Okay.
It is Bandeck's position that Section 1205 is unambiguous and thus does not leave room for interpretive discretion. And I would ask the panel to take note of the Call versus Ameritech management opinion from this court, which traces thoughts about the arbitrary and capricious standard of review, but I think quite correctly takes note that where what is being construed are unambiguous plan terms, the deference to the fiduciary's interpretation really withers away under those circumstances.
Essentially, you're asking us to award him the pension for the years from 78 to 95 when he didn't work in the United States, and he's already getting the UK pension, but because the language is unambiguous, that's just Eli's problem.
Your Honor, we don't think the language, we think the language is unambiguous and is very clear that when Lilly made its plan amendment in 1997, it crafted 1205B, and that language encompasses all retirement-type plans of foreign affiliates. And Lilly said, we are going to have an offset for all such plans. And those are both in the chairman's statements, and it's the clear reading of 1205B. And Lilly was very clear in saying, this is not going to apply retroactively. This offset that we are creating for the retirement plans of foreign affiliates will apply for employees who are localized on and after April 1 of 1997. Because Dr. Bandeck localized in 1995, he is not subject to the carefully crafted offset provision that Lilly created. So there is no windfall here. There is his participation under the United Kingdom plan, and there is his participation in the Lilly plan, and he was promised on day one, both in the Lilly plan and in the localization contract that he signed, that he would get years of service credit dating back to 1978, rolling forward for purposes of his participation in the Lilly plan. So there's not a double recovery. There is a benefit of the bargain. There is a deal here. And it is remarkable that Lilly wants to turn this into some sort of unfair recovery or windfall or double recovery when the very structure of 1205B creates an entire class of employees, those localized before April 1.
But it is true. He's getting pension. He was getting, in effect, two pensions at the same time for a number of years.
Only as a result of the district court ruling did he receive both his entire UK pension and now the...
No, I understand, but he was, on your view, he was receiving, it was a kind of windfall, right, to be getting these two. Most people don't have two pension plans.
Especially when they don't work in the United States.
That much is true. That much is true. But that, as I said, that is the benefit of the bargain in the localization contract. That is the deal that Lilly makes when it pulls people from their homes and localizes them in the United States and that is exactly the contract provision.
So I take it there was nothing in the localization contract at the time that Dr. Bandek transferred here that mentioned the foreign benefits at all.
That's correct. And there is nothing in that localization contract that in any way alerted him that there would be an offset. And interestingly...
Then before you go to that, what about his statements that he was getting, his retirement benefit statements? According to counsel, do you agree with him that that did not include this additional $4,000 a month? So he knew exactly what the amount was, even though there was no explanation as to how that figure was derived.
We disagree with that characterization, Your Honor. And the reason that we disagree with that is that if you look at those benefit statements purport to tell him what his benefit is going to be under the Lilly plan only. It provides no indication. It is not a notice relative to his past participation in the Lilly UK plan or what he might expect from that plan.
So is he English or American?
He is English, Your Honor. Yes. So, Your Honor, if you combine the plain language of 1205B, which creates the offset for the retirement plans of foreign affiliates, and you say, well, that creates a broad class, and it is only prospective in terms of the offset, then you turn to 1205A, and you say, well, where's the coordination here? There's clearly overlap if you're going to adopt the construction that Lilly urges. There's no coordination here. And Lilly says...
If he had stayed in England rather than be transferred to the United States, would that have affected his pension at all?
Under the scenario, as I think you've described it, he would have remained a pensioner under the Lilly UK plan, and he would have enjoyed whatever benefits that plan would have afforded.
I see. So it was because he came to the United States that he received a U.S. pension.
Yes, Your Honor. That was the bargain.
But he was still getting contributions for the UK plan when he was in the United States?
His continued accrual of benefits in the UK plan ceased at that point. So what he had accrued under the UK plan matures as of the time he localizes, and his benefits under that plan are what they are. It's not in the record, but the benefits are what they are. But when they localize him, they say, now here's the deal. We are, for purposes of the Lilly plan, the U.S. plan, we are going to give you past service credit back to 1978, the date that you started. That's the promise in the localization contract, and the plan provides the same language. And when Lilly calculates Bandak's service credit for purposes of the U.S. plan, they calculate it correctly. He isn't getting double credit. Days are not being counted twice for purposes of the Lilly plan. Every day is only being counted once. It's simply a time period that extends from 1987 until his retirement in 2004.
Well, what is the effect of the 1997 amendment then? If that applied to him, what does that do? Because I think what you said is while he was in England, I guess the company, maybe he also are making, well, was defined benefit in England. Was that a defined benefit plan?
We think that the nature of that benefit or that plan was a defined benefit type of plan.
So every year his benefit is growing. Is that how it works? So when he comes to the United States, he has some accrued benefit. But what? It continues to grow.
I dare say that his benefits for purposes of the UK plan, which were not the subject of any in-depth analysis at the district court level, are fairly frozen in time. He has years of service. He had a level of income. That gets frozen in time, and he gets pulled into the U.S. plan in 1995.
Well, But then I'm puzzled what the force of the 1997 amendment would be if it applied to him. Would it wipe out his UK entitlement?
It does not, Your Honor, and the reason that it does apply to him, and it would apply to the UK plan. It is a retirement-type plan sponsored by a Lilly foreign affiliate. But because of the prospective application...
How would it apply? Suppose your opponent is correct. Suppose the company is right. What is the mechanism exactly by which this 4,000 gets wiped out? So he'd accrued a 4,000 monthly pension plan under the UK. So would the force of the 1997 amendment, according to, even though he'd accrued all these benefits, they get wiped out, they get subtracted from his Lilly's
argument is that there was language in what is now 1205A.
I don't want the legal argument. I want to know how this works. He comes to the United States and he has an accrued defined benefit of some sort under the Lilly UK plan. Now, what do they think? What does Lilly think happens to that defined benefit? Is it just wiped out completely so that he never gets any UK Lilly pension?
The benefit to Bandak under the Lilly US plan is reduced by the actuarial equivalent of the pounds that he's receiving under his UK plan benefit.
Oh, I see.
So they reduce the US plan.
So he's, I see, they're not wiping out his UK benefits. They're just subtracting them from his Lilly pension.
Yes.
Now, this American Lilly, his American Lilly plan, which starts when he comes to the United States, so that doesn't give him any credit for past, for his previous employment by Lilly. That was just under the English Lilly plan?
No, in fact, it's exactly the opposite. The arrangement under the localization contract and the terms of the Lilly U.S. plan give him past service credit extending back to 1978 when he started working with the foreign affiliate. So there isn't any serious doubt between the parties that the service credit was calculated correctly by Lilly in the U.S. plan.
So that, I guess, is their concern, because when he starts working in the United States, even though he only works in the United States a relatively short time until his retirement, he gets credit for all the time he was employed by Lilly Worldwide. So he gets a pretty generous pension.
He does.
Even though much of the time he was abroad. Oh, okay, I think I understand.
All right.
Thank you.
So, Your Honor, back to 1205A and 1205B, Lilly had an obligation to try to account for the obvious language and meaning of 1205B, creating the offset. And they don't do that. They argue we'd like there to be a meaning to qualified defined benefit plan that somehow includes other nations throughout the world, and we've cited the authority which makes clear that that's not what is understood in the courts or the commentators, and there was no support in the record.
And let me just ask you this. So since we're looking at Bandak and what his understanding of the meaning is, your bottom line is that he should not, that it was okay for him to reason that he was to get two pensions for the same time period, that that's what qualified plan meant.
I would... It is permissible, I would say it this way, Your Honor, it is permissible for Bandak to get two pensions, and if you go to the statements of the chairman at the board meeting where they modified the plan to add the offset, to create the offset, it is clear that that is when the offset is created, and that offset does not apply to Dr. Bandak.
I'm just saying his understanding of a qualified plan. I'm talking about Bandak's understanding of
Dr.
a qualified
Bandak,
plan, that he would read that to understand that he would get a double pension.
Yes, I think any reasonable person reading that language would have that understanding and not be informed of the contrary.
I don't know if it's relevant at all, but was there any testimony from him about what he thought when he came to the United States? Because presumably moving to the United States from England is a major career decision, and you might be very interested in what your pension entitlements would be. Is there anything?
Dr. Bandak is here today, and he would like to tell you about that. But that is not in the record, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. I see my time is up.
Mr. Larimore?
I want to speak to the very last question of Judge Williams. If you look at page 37 of our appendix, it tells you exactly what Dr. Bandak thought when he came to the United States. He had no expectation of receiving any benefit under the UK plan.
Okay, where is this? You're
page 37 of our appendix. He had no expectation of receiving any benefit under the UK plan. He didn't know he had any accrued benefits in the UK plan, 37 of our appendix.
So he testified before the committee.
He wrote a letter to the committee and said, I'm surprised to hear that I have anything coming from the UK. I never knew that. And that was after he retired.
But why would that? Why should we care about that?
Well, I'm just trying to get the record straight because that was the question that was asked by Judge Williams. What I'd like to just close on is what's the purpose of the plan, of this part of the plan, and it goes to what your questions were, Judge Posner, that if someone does what Dr. Bandak did, works in England for a while, has those benefits under a defined benefit plan, then comes to the U.S. and starts over again, he'll get less in total pension than if all those years were counted in one defined benefit plan. And we have calculations that show that. It's a district court document, number 96, at page 3 to 4. It has examples. The point of the Lilly plan was...
Worse off?
He would be worse...
Argument? I don't know.
He would be worse off if he took his England benefits, and then we started his Lilly U.S. benefits in 1995 when he localized it.
Gave him that service credit, yeah.
And the whole point of the offset is to keep from penalizing people who transfer into Lilly U.S., not to pay them double benefits, but to avoid that penalty so that they're not penalized in their pension by coming to the U.S. That's all I wanted to say. Lilly's design was to avoid that penalty, but not to pay double benefits. If it was going to pay double to people who came to work in the U.S., we'd expect they'd tell them very clearly, you're getting double. It's a big incentive for you to come here. But that's not what they tell them. They just say you're getting benefits under the U.S. plan like you've worked here all along.
Well, it sounds like the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel.